What's up, everyone? I'm Nick.
I'm Em.
And welcome into the Ominous Archives. What's going on, Em?
Not much with me. Besides this cough, my allergies have been terrible. Nobody wants to hear about my Debbie Downer stories.
But the pollen's been legit.
It really has been. Like, every single time I go to get in my car and I clean my windshield, it's like a full line of just pollen.
Yep.
It's terrible.
It's been bad. My toolbox is covered in pollen.
Yeah.
My truck's covered in pollen.
Like, I'm sure you can hear it in my voice. Like,
yeah.
I promise. I'm not trying to sound like this.
It's that time of year.
Yeah, really.
And then you're going to get to, like, midsummer and you're going to be like, oh, it's ridiculously hot.
Seriously.
And we're going to be in for it. It's going to be rough this summer. But... I think that's all I got, though, as far as news for me. Bad pollen or anything like that.
Yeah.
But we do have some exciting new news.
New news.
Because we have a new team member. Her name is Samantha. She is going to be a researcher writer for us to kind of lend a hand and give us some help in that area. And she also has her own website if you want to go check her out at scaremesam.com. Or you can go and listen to her podcast, Scare Me Sam. And Em, I think you have that description.
Yeah, it's a podcast dedicated to horror books, both new and old. Whether you're discovering modern releases or revisiting classic tales, she explores the chilling stories that define the genre. You can join her for in-depth discussions, recommendations, and a deep dive into the dark world of horror literature.
I find my next book from her podcast.
There you go.
So
look at that.
It is pretty good.
All right.
Yep. I didn't even get through the whole thing. I was like, I'm going to listen. I'm going to read that book.
I'm getting this book.
That one sounds really good.
I'm intrigued.
Yeah. Why don't we jump into episode... Did we say this was 20?
I think we just decided that this was 20, yeah.
This one, we're deciding this is 20. Whether it's 20 or not, this is 20.
It is now.
So I'm going to be talking about a small mysterious creature that is said to roam throughout New England's misty forests. It's known as the Puckwudgie. This figure has roots deep into the folklore of the Wampanoag Nation, a Native American tribe of the Massachusetts and southern New England area. But do you know who?
Lou.
I didn't think you did.
I'm going through my brain. I've never heard of this before.
Of course I'm going to enlighten you. Why wouldn't I? That's it. That's the episode. Cut it right there.
Mic drop, we're done. Bye, guys.
You guys can all figure out what it is.
See ya.
Are they a vengeful spirit bent on causing harm? Are they just misunderstood guardians of the natural world? Today, we're going to take a deep dive into the centuries of stories, beliefs, and even some modern sightings to try and understand what these elusive beings are.
Oh, I'm excited. Because I literally, all I've got right now is a name. I've got nothing.
Puckwudgies, not wedgies. Wudgies.
Not to be confused with.
Don't confuse them with
wedgies. Wudgie man.
Yeah, don't confuse them with that. So why don't we start with the basics? What is a puckwudgie exactly? Well, puckwudgies are small humanoid creatures from the folklore of the Wampanoag people, a Native American tribe from the northeastern United States, particularly around the Massachusetts area. Now, the word Puckwudgie comes from the Wampanoag language, where it's said to mean person of the wilderness, or simply little person.
What a description.
Straight to the point.
What an origin.
Right. So these creatures are typically described as standing around 2 to 3 feet tall, with grayish or brownish skin. Their ears are often described as large, and they have sharp pointed teeth. Their faces bear features similar to those of the Wampanoag people, but they have enlarged fingers and noses. Sometimes they're portrayed with almost an animalistic goblin appearance covered in hair, while at other times they are depicted as more human-like in their features. Their smooth and gray skin kind of gives them an eerie, unnatural look. Maybe they look a little sickish. Maybe not, you know? I've never seen one. So, but I think gray skin, I kind of think sometimes. Some descriptions, pulled from both the Wampanoag oral tradition and later retellings, even note that the Pukwudgies have sharp quills or spikes sticking out of their backs, much like a porcupine.
I was literally just going to say, so they're a fancy porcupine.
They are a evolved porcupine. There's like, you know, you have Pikachu and then like Raichu. Yeah. You have porcupine Pukwudgie.
Got it.
Yeah. So these spikes serve both as a defense mechanism and as a weapon, giving the Pukwudgie yet another tool in their mischievous arsenal. Mm. So now we kind of know what they look like and everything. Why not we, let's get into the origins. You know, where are these guys from? The Pukwudgie story begins long before the settlers arrived in North America. These creatures are deeply tied to the folklore of various Native American tribes, including the Lenape. I'm going to try this one. Ojibwe, and the Wampanoag. The word Pukwudgie is rooted in the Algonquin languages, but its true meaning and significance have evolved. In Native American mythology, particularly within the stories of the Wampanoag people, the Pukwudgies were once known as the Little People, a race of beings possessing powerful magic. These creatures were not simply seen as cryptids or as trolls, but as magical entities with their own social structure, much like the tribes they interact with. Pukwudgies live in small groups, forming bands led by a chief. They reside in the saltwater marshes around Papanesset Bay.
That's a fun word.
Papanesset. The local south of the Mashpee on Cape Cod, where they were believed to practice their powerful magic. Now, according to the Encyclopedia of Fairies in World Folklore and Mythology, whew, that was a mouthful. The Pukwudgies depicted in the Wampanoag folklore are not the helpful little creatures we might expect from other folklore. Instead, they're known for their malevolent acts, magical abilities, and malicious tendencies. These small, troll-like beings stand no taller than 3 feet and are said to possess several powerful attributes. They can appear and disappear at their own will.
Oh.
They can shapeshift into animals, hence the porcupine. They can use magical arrows that create fire. And they control Tepewonks, spirits of the people that they have killed. I think it's pretty wild that they can control the spirit of people they've already killed.
I think the shape-shifting into other animals is kind of crazy. I don't... how many things do you know that can shape-shift?
Yeah. It's almost skinwalker-ish.
Yeah.
You know?
Also, magical arrows that create fire, not fun.
No.
I does not seem like something I want to...
come across?
Yeah, no.
No, I don't think.
Can't say.
I mean, these ones. The Pukwudgies' malicious nature is further reflected in their behavior, according to the Encyclopedia of Fairies in the World, in world folklore and mythology. They are known to lure unsuspecting individuals to cliffs and push them off.
What?
You want me to reread it for you?
No, I heard you. I was just making sure.
Yep. They'll just push you right, boop.
Just pop you right off there.
Yep. So that method of attack, or their method of attack, often involves floating balls of light, and this mysterious phenomena would lead victims into the woods where they would be killed or kidnapped by the creatures.
Oh.
These stories highlighted their physical traits and dangerous and unpredictable behaviors.
I would hope that if I came across one of these that they would just take me out. I don't want to be kidnapped by one of these things. Just take me out with your ball of light. Have my spirit, whatever.
Lure me to a cliff and just boop.
Yeah, it's fine. I'm good. I don't need to be kidnapped.
I'd wear, if I lived in New Orleans, if I lived in New England, I'd probably just wear a wingsuit all the time. If I was like a hiker.
A wingsuit.
Like hiked in the woods. Yeah. Dad, push me off. Bloop.
I'm flying now.
I'm like Hiccup, man. Now, there are different perspectives of the Pukwudgies as a protector. Huh. Not all interpretations of the Pukwudgies align with that darker view. In the Complete Encyclopedia of Elves, Goblins, and Other Little Creatures...
I would like to read this encyclopedia, first of all.
Right? Where can I get one?
Yeah, seriously, give me a copy.
The Pukwudgies are presented in an entirely different light. Rather than being malicious, they are depicted as guardians of the nature world. Natural world. Nature world. It sounds like a pet store. Guardians of the natural world. Tasked with protecting the harvests, the flora, and the fauna. According to this source, they appear to those who live in harmony with nature and who maintain and protect it. I am going to have to ask my brother-in-law about this, if he's ever come across a Pukwudgie.
Hey, big nature guy.
Yeah. They also appear to those who, on their deathbeds, have made peace with themselves and with the world.
See, like, that's a good little perspective to have. Like, if I came in an encounter with this kind of Pukwudgie.
Right?
They seem to be
this. This is the Pukwudgie you want to come across.
Yeah.
Not the push clip and the clip
flip side. Line.
Yeah. The other side of the coin. Yet, despite their connection to nature, the Pukwudgies are not entirely passive. The Complete Encyclopedia of Elves, Goblins, and Other Little Creatures also mentions that the Pukwudgies gather once a year to hold a grand council.
It's like a little town meeting.
Could you imagine?
Yeah.
I think of the little rock trolls from Frozen.
Yeah.
Hear ye, hear ye.
Hear ye, hear ye.
Little gavels. During the gathering, they discuss the future of the universe, which is scary.
Yeah, what the heck?
It is said that if the Pukwudgies ever become disappointed with humanity and cease meeting, it will end time itself.
Oh, that's no bueno.
I agree. Agreed.
Yeah.
Now, while some of the little people in the Native American stories were helpful to humans, the Pukwudgies also had a much darker reputation. They were known for their malevolent acts, such as shooting darts at people, luring travelers off cliffs, and simply scaring those unfortunate enough to cross their paths. One of the most terrifying encounters in the Freetown State Forest in Massachusetts, a location that has become infamous for the Pukwudgie sightings. In 2007, author Christopher Blazano recounted a chilling tale in his book, Dark Woods, Cults, Crime, and the Paranormal of in the Freetown State Forest. So Joanne, a woman walking her dog through the forest, spotted a small humanoid figure. The creature had gray skin, hairy arms, and deep green eyes that locked onto hers. After this initial encounter, Joanne claimed that the Pukwudgie followed her home, appearing near her house multiple times in the following days.
Nope.
It just followed her home.
You let a little creature, unknown creature, follow you home.
It was a Pukwudgie. It was not unknown.
Okay, well, it would be unknown to you if you didn't do this podcast, and it was clearly unknown to her.
Well, then if you give it a name like Fred, now he's not unknown again.
I guess.
He could be a little gnome living in my garden.
Whatever. I see her. I see her thought process, I suppose.
So now we have Bob. Now, he was just a child, probably about 7 or 8, when he had this encounter. He was watching TV with some of his cousins at his grandparents' house in Lawrence, Massachusetts. Now, they were sitting on a couch, which was facing the TV, and the back of the couch was towards, like, a doorway to another room. So, you could potentially walk up behind people on the couch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, our couch is against the wall.
Right.
There was nothing there. So, they're sitting there watching TV, and somebody pulls Bob's hair. Now, he blames his cousin Sandra, told her to stop. She denied pulling his hair, you know, 7, 8-year-old things.
Yeah.
And a few seconds later, he felt it again. So he, again, you know, he yells at Sandra, who's still saying she didn't do it. And a few more seconds go by, And Bob once again feels someone tug on his hair. So now, as angry as an 8-year-old gets, he turns around, expecting to yell at one of his cousins hiding behind the couch. But his anger turned to surprise when he saw not his cousin standing there, but a little old lady with long white hair. Not his grandma. And we're talking little. He says like 2 or 3 feet tall.
Oh.
9 inches in.
See, like, I don't know what I would do.
He didn't either. Because when she saw Bob looking back at her, she quickly started to run towards the front door of the house. Booking it as fast as her little 2-foot, 3-foot leg could take her. But the crazy thing is, poof, she vanishes in the thin air before she even gets to the door. So at this point, Bob was understandably surprised, and he blurted out what he saw to his grandmom, and she said, "Don't worry, they're friendly."
Don't worry.
So this is kind of, you know, he's kind of like, what? They're friendly? And he ends up having a second incident. So Bob and his mom, or Bob's mom, takes him and his cousins, including the hair-pulling Sandra, out to the movies, where after the movie, they return to their grandparents' house. Now, the door was locked, which it should be, because nobody was home. But to their surprise, they saw a lamp on in the living room. So Sandra ran up to the window and peered through it. And she jumps back from the window and screams, "I'm getting the F out of here." So at that point, Bob's mother stepped up to the window, looked inside, and she says she sees a very short old man with long white hair run out of the living room. And at that point, she gathered the kids and took off.
Critical thinking skills.
So later on at some point, they explore the attic and stuff of the house, and they find half, like, drank Coke bottles,
mm-hmm.
and, like, some remnants of, like, possible what could be, like, food left behind. And they were like, why would they put these up here? Like, who would be drinking these? Her parents, you know, they weren't going up there to drink them.
Right.
Assuming rats can't open Coke bottles and drink it. You know? So, who knows?
Right.
Now, these puckwudgies were potentially friendly ones.
Hmm.
So maybe it was a deal they kind of made where
they'd leave them food, if you're not going to bother me
and stuff like that,
have my Coke.
I'd be my guess.
Have my Coca-Cola.
I'll give you some soda and some food if you're just going to hang around and do your thing and I'll do my thing. Be my guest. I'm all for it. So, interestingly, the puckwudgies appearance has changed over time. Early accounts, including illustrations from the 1910 edition
1910.
Of, yeah, we're talking old.
Sorry.
Well, I guess it's talking cryptids wise. I guess it's not that old.
Yeah, it's
old,
not
but
that
that's,
old.
It's
but
old.
Like hearing like 1910 just sounds like so long ago. Like,
yep, black and white photos,
right.
All that stuff. Yep. The 1910 edition of the Song of Hiawatha. We're just gonna roll right over that. Hiawatha. Depicted puckwudgies as a small, pygmy-like figures consistent with the little people of the Native American folklore. These early representations capture the magical essence of the creature. However, by the 1980s, things began to change. In Jean Fritz's children's book, The Good Giant and the Bad Puckwudgies, why do I not own that book? it's from 1982.
That would be why.
That would be why. Puckwudgies were reimagined as small, troll-like beings with gray skin and large dark eyes. This shift in portrayal helped cement the modern view of the Puckwudgies as cryptids.
Hmm.
Strange, out-of-worldly creatures lurking in the forest rather than magical beings with complex cultural roles. So this evolution of Pukwudgies in popular culture raises important questions about cultural misappropriation. Many Native American scholars, like Rachel Sayet, have criticized modern depictions of Pukwudgies, particularly those that distort the original meanings of these beings in Native American folklore. Sayet, a Mohegan tribe member, wrote a master's thesis on Mohegan folklore, where she expressed concerns over books like The Good Giants and the Bad Pukwudgies. The book, while widely popular, misrepresents Native American stories, distorting their meanings and culture of significance. In fact, members of the Alquinia Wampanoag tribe have laughed off the book, saying it bears little resemblance to their traditional folklore. Furthermore, scholars like Stefan Gencarcella suggest that the modern-day obsession with Pukwudgies is rooted in misinterpretation. The Pukwudgies originally depicted as malicious and magical figures, I almost said features, were symbolically linked to the Wampanoag people's experience with colonialism. They represented wild settlers tormenting the native tribes, much like the Pukwudgies in the stories tormented the Wampanoag's magical protector, Mashop. Standing in stark contrast to the Pukwudgies, there's Mashop, the legendary giant of Wampanoag lore. The relationship between Mashop and the Pukwudgies is critical to understanding the symbolic tension within the Wampanoag worldview. Mashop is credited with creating much of the local landscape, dropping massive stones from the islands off the coast of Massachusetts, and shaping the hills and rivers. Mashop is a protector, ensuring that the bounty of the land for his people. Stories describe him smoking a giant pipe that produces clouds and stomping down forests to create fields for planting.
Muff. He's just a pipe-smoking giant.
Yeah. Just smoking my... Smoking.
Protecting
smoking,
his people.
Yeah. Protecting my people, smoking my pipe, creating clouds, making fields. Importantly, Mashop is also the enemy of the Pukwudgies. In some versions of the tale, after the Pukwudgies began to harass the Wampanoag people, Mashop attempted to drive them away. Although Mashop defeated many Pukwudgies, the creatures proved persistent, returning time and time again to cause mischief and harm. Some stories even suggest that after Mashop's mysterious disappearance, the Pukwudgies grew stronger and more dangerous without his protection. Thus, the tension between Mashop and the Pukwudgies mirrors broader themes. Order versus chaos, protection versus destruction, harmony versus disruption. Despite their distorted modern image, Pukwudgies remain a staple in paranormal circles. Their connection to the haunted Freetown State Forest and other areas with eerie reputations has kept the legend alive. Paranormal investigators have adopted the term Pukwudgie to describe the cryptids they claim to encounter in these forests. However, modern interpretation raises the question, are these beings truly Pukwudgies, or have they become something entirely different? Creatures entirely divorced from their cultural origins. While Pukwudgies aren't as famous as vampires or werewolves, they have found a place in the modern pop culture. Are you ready for this one?
I'm ready.
Are you sure you're ready?
I'm ready.
All right. In J.K. Rowling's expanded Wizarding World,
oh, shit.
The Pukwudgie is a magical creature associated with the American Wizarding School, Ilvermorny.
Hmm.
One of the school's four houses, named Pukwudgie, is said to represent the heart of the wizard or witch and is favored by healers.
No way I didn't know that. No way you didn't know that.
I don't feel like I paid attention. Like,
is that not Fantastic Beasts? Like, I feel like that's Fantastic Beasts lore.
I'm 95% sure. No, because it still takes place with Hogwarts, and then they end up in the U.S., but do you ever really get into the schools?
I guess not.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, because I didn't read the Fantastic Beasts books.
I didn't read them either, but I feel like you have, like, I feel like there's, like, different levels of Harry Potter fandom.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I know a lot, but as far as, like, expanding out the story and, like, getting into, like, the American school and this school and that school, I don't.
Yeah, you lost me, honestly. Yeah,
I'm way out. So while Rowling's version softens the darker aspects of the Pukwudgie folklore, it has helped introduce the creature to a new global audience. They've also made appearances in other media, like the show Lore on Amazon Prime. It recounts real-life encounters with Pukwudgies as part of its exploration of supernatural legends.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
I think that's also Lore. I'm pretty sure it's based off that podcast too, Lore.
Oh, really?
I think. Huh. Don't hold me to that, but I think it is.
Yeah.
In the horror film community, Pukwudgies are occasionally referenced as mysterious figures haunting forests. However, as of now, no major horror movie is dedicated exclusively to the Pukwudgie.
Okay, so we're making one is what I'm hearing. We're going to come out with the first Pukwudgie movie.
You want us to create one?
Yeah, somebody's got to do it.
I mean, I guess. We'll have to, like...
Can you imagine?
Do you ever see Lock and Key?
Yeah.
We'll have to, like... Was it... What do they call it? The Splash?
Yeah.
No.
I know what you're talking about.
What is it called?
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Splattering. Yeah. The Splattering. Mm-hmm.
Somebody's got to do it.
It is interesting that they haven't, because there is so much on them and stuff.
Right.
Now. Something many fans, to jump back in, of the folklore, we just said it. Many fans think it's overdue.
Look at that. They're agreeing with me, Nick.
I know. I should have just finished reading the sentence before I got off track.
I actually got you off track. That's my fault.
Well, that is your fault. If I had a boo button, I'd hit the boo button.
Ooh.
But I don't.
Tomato. Throwing tomatoes.
There's books like Spirits of New England Forests by David W. Roberts that documents Pukwudgie sightings and encounters, keeping the myth alive in the 21st century. Despite their ancient roots, Pukwudgies aren't just confined to history. Many modern-day witnesses claim to have encountered these creatures, especially in places like Freetown State Forest in Massachusetts, which has become notorious for paranormal activity. This forest lies within the so-called Bridgewater Triangle. This region is famous for cryptid sightings, ghostly apparitions, and other unexplained phenomena. I feel like the Bridgewater Triangle could get its own episode, and the Pukwudgies would just be highlighted in that.
Right.
Because you know what else falls in the Bridgewater Triangle? That I believe you called dibs on? Lizzie Borden.
Ah!
I think, I'm almost positive she falls within the Bridgewater Triangle, or near it.
I love that girl.
Several hikers and visitors to the Freetown State Forest have reported seeing small, gray, humanoid figures darting between trees, being followed by glowing lights that disappear when approached.
Mm-mm.
I mean, if the light's following me, I don't know how much I care, but if I approach it and it disappears, I'm just going to be annoyed. Hearing eerie, high-pitched laughter or voices calling their names.
Not that.
That I don't like.
Mm-mm.
No way. One famous case involves a woman who claimed a Pukwudgie lured her off the trail by mimicking the voice of her dead husband.
Oh, that's terrible.
She narrowly avoided falling from a rocky ledge, chillingly parallel to the ancient legends. Another account reported in the Boston Globe described a park ranger who saw a porcupine-like creature standing on two legs. glaring at him before vanishing into thin air. Now, you know, can porcupines stand on two legs? Has anybody ever seen it?
I don't know enough about porcupines to know about that, but I feel like, aren't these things smaller than porcupines?
I know Chance from Homeward Bound got stuck with porcupines.
That's such a random, why did that make you think of
Chance?
That?
Because he got stuck in the face of the porcupine.
No, I know. I recall. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like I'm not going to mistake a puckwudgie for a porcupine. Although, the motherfuckers can shapeshift.
Grayish brown skin, spikes on their back. Totally.
True.
The big thing comes from, can porcupines stand on their back legs?
I can't say I've ever seen a porcupine stand on its back legs, but like I said, I really don't have much experience with porcupines.
I don't know if I've
seen
a porcupine.
Do we have porcupines?
I mean, around us, probably not.
Yeah,
but I'm sure.
I don't even think I've ever seen one.
I'm sure they're around here.
I mean, like at the zoo, but like.
Yeah, I'm sure they're around here.
Huh.
To jump back in. So, skeptics argue that these could be just misidentified animals, tricks of light, or even mass hysteria.
Oh, please. Mass hysteria.
Yeah. You didn't know? People are running around with, I saw a Puckwudgie sign. They've been running up and down my street all day.
All day.
But for believers, the consistency of the descriptions, small stature, porcupine-like spikes, glowing lights, and malevolent behavior, suggest the Puckwudgie remain active in the forests of New England. So, as you venture into the woods, or explore the stories about these elusive creatures, it's important to remember that the Puckwudgie story is more than just a spooky legend. It's a tale of cultural significance, colonization, and deep connections between people and their land. While the modern cryptid version of the Puckwudgie may captivate our imaginations, it's crucial to acknowledge that the origin context in which these beings existed, an essential piece of the Native American folklore. So the next time you hear a tale of the Puckwudgies, ask yourself, is it a cryptid? Or is it a misinterpreted piece of history?
Hmm.
And as you walk through the forest, who knows, maybe you'll catch a glimpse of one of these magical, mysterious beings still lurking in the shadows of time.
It is interesting to think about, because, like, really, like, is it an actual, like, cryptid? Or, you know, the other option.
Is it an actual magical being?
Right.
1,000% I think it's a magical being.
Well,
I mean,
with the shape-shifting, the luring of the husband's, using a dead husband's voice is crazy. That is, what's the word I'm looking for?
Spooky? Scary?
No.
Keeping it weird?
Shut up. No, like, calculated. Like, they're smart, clearly.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I feel like I would underestimate this type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is definitely the type of cryptid, like, I'm underestimating. Like, if I come across this thing, that little thing's doing no damage to me.
I could just punch you.
I just kick you like a football.
Uh-huh. Until it stabs you with its arrow of fire.
Right. Literally.
Right?
Crazy. That was interesting. Never, ever in my life have I heard of that.
I fell in love with them when I heard about it.
Little puckies.
Tell me you haven't been in our campground and like felt like at nighttime you're being watched.
Oh, for sure.
I'm always looking in the woods.
So
like,
I was gonna say, especially like when you're surrounded by nothing but woods.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's
and you had a bunch
crazy.
Of cousins growing up telling you that there was literally monsters in the woods.
I mean, there are. There's Puckwudgies.
Yeah. Well.
See, we weren't wrong.
You guys weren't wrong, but you were literally trying to traumatize your poor cousin. It worked,
but you've still gone to how many places that are abandoned?
This
and
is true.
Spooky?
Maybe I think you guys definitely like.
We kindled the fire, and then Mr. Ballin fully
relighted
the fire.
Related it.
All right.
It's been a long night.
I was going to say, with that being said, we should probably just get out of here. We're losing our minds, losing our voices.
Yeah.
Don't forget to go check out our new team member stuff.
Yes.
ScareMeSam.com. Podcast is Scare Me Sam. And also, don't forget to follow us on our social medias.
Yes.
Instagram, X, TikTok. Are all Ominous Archives?
Yeah, I think they're the Ominous Archives.
And if you have a little story or you want to just reach out to us, you can email us at ominousarchives@gmail.com.
All right, everyone. That wraps it up tonight. We are going to catch you next week. See ya.